Tonight on Horror for All, my guest is Simon Robb. Simon Robb is an occultist. What is occultism? Dark and mysterious. The cult is a kind of supernatural power of magic. You see your neighbour chanting over a giant vat of bubbling brew. In the middle of the night, there's a chance he's dabbling in the occult. The Latin occult has its roots in Latin, occultism, meaning hidden secret. But is it just this? We learn more from my guest, Simon Robb, author, extraordinaire. Look him up on Amazon as S. Robb. And he's on YouTube, and also has his own website where you can check out all these things. So check out S. Robb. Hi, it's nice to meet you again, Simon. We've been talking a long time now. And what do you think occultism is in the world today?
Well, I think it is partly to help a lot of trouble for those that write it, because you wouldn't believe the crap we get. But seriously, what I think it is, I mean, occultism technically means hidden knowledge. That's what it actually means. But in reality, when we're talking about with magic, what it really means is things that are not obvious, that weren't a part of the world, when you're using thought and metaphysics in order to do things, it's basically better defined by its contents. You're just talking about using your mind, thought, to change the world without necessarily physical actions at all. It's the idea that your will or your emotion has a power even when no one acts on it. Simply the matter that it exists can change the world and how things happen. And that's basically what it's about. You know, the idea that even without action, that your thoughts still count for something.
Do you think, as you said earlier, people got this misunderstanding about occultism? They reckon you're going around cutting goats up and spraying blood everywhere and doing strange little dances.
Yeah, I think it's because of its link to religion. So what you do is they want something to blame. The religious stuff wants, they blame it on occultism, they blame it on magic, and they say how they're doing all these weird things. And a lot of the time, it's like your religious people that say that, and I'm thinking, well, no, that's what religious people do. You know, you're getting weird little pieces of bread and giving them to people, and you're saying that these people are damned because they haven't had water put on their head. And people slaughtering goats and all this, that's the thing they do. And they're putting something to represent blood in a cup. But these are the things that they do. These aren't occult things. These are things that are religious things. But they want to blame them on witches, warlocks, wizards, you know, that sort of thing, you know, if you want a better word. On occultists, we get blamed for all the stuff that they're doing by the people doing it. But that's the thing, they can't see that they're the ones that are doing it, because they can't see it. They've been anesthetised to their own beliefs, so they just see them as a neutral position. So they can't see all the wacky and weird and unreasonable stuff that's in it.
Yeah, you know, I think, as you say, it's a crazy situation, because, as we've mentioned before, a lot of pagan rites are still used by Christians and other religions today.
That's true, yeah. I mean, most of your old religious rites go right the way back. All they do is, when they create a new religion, is they normally just rehash the very old ones. That's all they do. They just look at the rituals and rehash them. So there's nothing really new there. It's just a rehash of old and older, older rituals. That's all they do. They're just rehashing stuff. You know, they're just repackaging it. Because they want to do it in such a way that is familiar to people. So by rehashing the old rituals, people can go in without having to learn anything new. That's all it is, really.
When you write your books, I like the way you write your books, how you say about entering the gate and closing the gate. Why do you do it that way?
To be honest, it was something that I just started off doing. Because at first, the first books I wrote, I didn't do that. They were very simple prayers. You know, grant no god and goddess, blah, de, blah, de, blah, that's how they were done. And then I started using the sword is and will be. I think I did that bit straight away. And what I realised was I needed a way to summon them. And I looked at some of the concepts of gateways, and were done through sigils and this and that, but I stumbled on some of the old Christian stuff, the stuff they weren't supposed to be researching into, and they were talking about entities that were gateway entities. And from there I thought, you know, because they just talked about them. And when I realised what, I thought, no, these entities can summon things through. It's easy. You need something to help with the transition. So I tested it out and I started opening the, calling these gateway entities, opening and closing and summoning things through and back. And so that was how it worked. I just invented it. It was something I really invented from things, ideas that were existing, but something I invented. Because you need something to help with the transition. That's what I was thinking at the time. You need something to aid the transition of things coming into and going out of the world. And that was why I came up with it for. And it turned out to be much more useful than that. There's a lot more to it. It's really been probably a lifesaver for me at times. Because even if, you know, like if you're in a state where you mentally feel like splintered, where you're not really feeling very well, you can summon some gateway entities and tell you that you're going to walk through and enter a place where your mind is fully integrated and you can walk through it and it will be. So you can use it to do that or to treat yourself mentally if you feel like depressed. You can walk through and see, we open the doorway, blah, 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 Papa Legba, the voodoo man, to a place where I'm not depressed, and you walk through and you're not depressed or you're less depressed. So it's great. It's been very useful. There's not much you can't do with it. I mean, there was a time when I was when I contacted a religious organisation out of the Vatican, actually, this Vatican guy, and I don't know if it was them, but after that, all hell broke loose, and there was literally, I was literally stuck there, there was things that looked a bit alien-like, probably demons of some sort. I was literally stuck in a low plane of existence. Everything was dark, I dirty, yeah, the whole thing, and that's how you have it. Not the bottom plane, but a low plane. And part of the way I got out was by using gateways. I went through the gateways many times and I rose myself up to a higher plane where they weren't there, where they couldn't get to. And it was that simple. So I literally escaped from where my soul was in a lower plane, in the same house, it was still in the same house, but in a lower plane, to one which was different. In the lower one, everything was dirty. In the higher one, everything was clean and brighter, and, you know, so I literally had to escape. Because obviously somebody hadn't, like, somebody had said or had contacted them with. So it's been useful so many times that, you know, it has just been so useful to me and other people.
Yeah, I know that you've written quite a lot of occultist books, and some of them, I remember you saying, recognised in the magic circle, I think you said that, wasn't it?
It was actually the Society of American Magicians, the Magic Castle it is, which is American, but they've got the biggest collection of like of books, but it's the occult escapology books, yeah, and that's where I put occultism together, real magic with escapology in these rituals, and all but one of the occult escapology books is in there now, so I'm trying to tell me occult escapology books there is, probably around 10 or something, which is quite a few to be in there. Because there's no other books on occultism in there. It's all about like stage magic and stuff like that, you know, like the Paul Daniels type of stuff, not the occult stuff. So I'm very proud to be in there. I've got another one to get in there at the moment. We'll see about that one. That's actually one called Occult Escapology to Abduct Aliens.
Oh.
And I think that was a fun book. That's a great book.
Well, you must be like me. You must get like inspired quite often to write a book.
I do, but it's also a draw on the weird stuff which happens, because I've got to the stage now where I've got forces working against me, and I think, I don't know whether, how why it works, because in some respect you think, look, if they really want to work against me they'll just kill me, but they're not. So for some reason I've got these forces working against me, or maybe they're helping me in some way, I don't know. And so you end up with these strange stories and things which I write in the books. They don't realise, you see, if something happens that's odd or I get treated badly, I try to use it in some way to write into a book. So if someone does like a very unusual curse, or like there was a time when I literally it was similar the other time actually, when this time there was Men in Black. But I didn't get the ones everyone else gets, you know, the Men in Black that come round and menace you. I didn't get those ones, I wasn't that lucky. And there was a situation where they were troubling children and things like this, And there was some kids wrecked the car on the highway, which I thought was funny and a good thing, actually. The buggers won't come round here anymore because the kids wrecked the car. And what happened was basically, there was not just that, but there was these, like, I think they described as like see-through aliens, basically come through the door but no other way. So what I did, I was stuck for 5 hours, I know this sounds weird, for 5 hours I was stuck with these really advanced technology, basically, I was up against. And I had this stick, so I'm swinging this stick for basically 5 hours. But I realised something, somewhere along the line, I thought, I've got to try and trip them up. So you know them black shiny pebbles you can buy in supermarkets, I don't know if you've seen them.
Yeah.
But you put them in these little glass balls. Well, I put some of them at the door, and at the other door, I thought, they might slip on that. If they slip, I'm going to bring their bloody head in. Because this walking stick's got like a metal pole down it and a big metal end. I thought, I'm going to smash the bloody head of this bloody alien. You know, if it falls here, I'm going to smash its bloody head in. But it didn't. But what I realised, when I started shouting at it, the buggers thought that it was some sort of a magic pebble. It thought that the pebbles were high technology, so they couldn't leave. Now, I did it with the other door, and I thought, oh, shit. I've kidnapped them. I've unwittingly kidnapped these aliens because now they think they're trapped in with me. And I was actually thinking, and I thought, so what do I do? Do I contact the Ministry of Defence? And I thought, well, that's not going to sound that good, is it? How do you describe that to them? Hello, Mr. Ministry of Defence. I have kidnapped some aliens. Can you send a big van quickly? I just can't see that going very well.
No.
And I was there. And I was there 5 bloody hours. 5 hours I was there. Swinging this bloody stick, I caught something once, but 5 hours I was swinging this bloody stick around, and one of them eventually thought maybe we can sneak out that other door, maybe those pebbles aren't as good, and it went out, and I was so bloody happy when they all started to go. I thought, oh, thank God, I thought, because I'd unwittingly kidnapped the bastards, so I would kidnap them, and I put myself in the situation where you've got to act like it was your plan all along. Because I thought there's nothing else I could do except to make out that it was... Because these are aliens. These things are bloody... You know, it's like they can touch you if they want to, but you can't touch them. And I was making loud noises. They didn't make loud noises. And I thought, I've got to make out that this is the plan. So I'm trying to say, you know, well, nothing will happen to you if you don't do anything and all that. And I'm thinking, what the hell have I done here? But like I said, it all sort of worked itself out. But the thing is, I do realise, though, is that I think some of the time, some of these forces working against me are poisoning me sometimes. And that's the problem. So you've got a combination of occultism and poisons and actual things. Like when that happened, there was at one point there was like a laser pointer across my arm. Now I was left with a mark. I'm not there now, but afterwards there was like a mark on my arm. Now I was worried that the bicep was going to break. But laser pointers can't do that. I don't think they'd work that out. It's not. They're just like laser pointers. You know, what they wanted, obviously, was a medical laser or a scalpel or something like that, but what they got was a laser pointer. And there was a mark on the arm, but I think it was a combination. I think they may have put something in the food or something, so I don't know exactly what happened. I do believe the aliens were there, but it was one of those... You know when people always say about men in black? They are real, they do exist.
Yeah, oh, no, I don't dismiss it. I've done enough research. I believe they're there. How are you getting on with your YouTube channel? Are you still doing that?
I'm still doing it, yeah. I'm doing a lot of things on there. I keep doing different series and things. So all the stuff's on there. At the moment I'm doing Pirate Riot, which is me talking about things. One of the things I'm talking about on there is slavery, because I realise slavery still exists. And I worked that out in one of the times I went away somewhere, when I went on holiday, and I was in a different country, and I worked out there that slavery exists. Not there, I worked out when I got back. Because what happened was, I won't say exactly where I was, because it makes people feel secure, and I don't want to make them feel secure in this point. Because where I actually was, I was in that somewhere in Latin America, we'll say, is where I was. And basically, the bloody airplane had barely sat down before I was kidnapped. I literally was. And so basically, you're in this hotel, but this is not a normal kidnapping like you'd expect, like I would imagine. The world. I always imagined it's something like some gaffer tape guy with a gun in a white van. And what you got instead is a complete fake hotel. That's right, you've got a hotel which is fake, which is built. So you imagine this, Mark. You go into this lift, and the guy's in. You press the button to the level, and you're there, and you're looking at the level, and everything looks fine. In fact, if anything, it looked a bit too big. That should have told me something. And I'm coming down a bit. The room looked far too large. You come back down again, and everything's fine. And then you paid them the money, and they pressed the same bloody button, and this time at a different level, a different floor. So what you're running in is a floor. There's no bloody keyholes. You can't get to any of the electronics of the lift. There's no buttons. You're basically in a welded metal box. And I had to work this. I worked out that there were. They had the Sidecom working as well as this. They were also making drugs. And I realised no one gives a crap when you called out that window, because there was a tiny window with bars on. But I thought nobody really cares. It's obviously a lawless place. So what I did is I thought I'm going to take the bloody fuses, these big fuses out of this box. So I ripped the plastic off. And I'm taking these fuses out. I thought, not knowing if the bugger was going to blow up or not. So I'm taking these fuses out. Obviously, God knows how many millions of pounds of drugs I messed up. Which I think was a good thing. So then I'm downstairs, I'm downstairs then. And what I did is I had to use a combination of different things. Mostly it was hypnosis that I knew. So in 3 hours, you're outside. I won't go through the whole story. But you're outside. 3 hours later, you're outside instead of the several days. I wasn't going to give them any money. Because my thought was, if you give them any money, you've got no guarantee that what they're going to do or not do anyway. So I didn't give them anybody's number or anything. Anyway, but on the way back, which was unusual, it was like, it's funny, you're supposed to get damaged on the way back, it's supposed to be a dangerous place. I actually came back without a bloody scratch. So, back to, I think occultism was working particularly well that day. You know, the 5,000, 6,000 entities that were protecting me because I came back without a scratch on. But it was other things when I was there, and the things people said, because I knew that slavery, the last law was removed in 2001 in that place. And it was the way people said, yes, but this place is like its own place. It isn't like name of the country. This does its own thing. And there was a place mentioned it called the Old Slave Traders Bar, and I twigged, I thought, slavery's still here. See, I probably got the preferential trip. That's what I think. As a Westerner, I got the preferential trip, they're thinking, always an author gets this trip. But I think there's another trip that I think the migrants get. So if you're going to that country, or they go to probably anywhere in Latin America, and you're seeking asylum, and you go to the airport or something, I think there's another trip. Because I think what happened was, there's a woman there, and she said, oh, we have to send some of the people, we'd send them to hotels. And she said, how do I know if the hotels are real or not? And I said, well, I can't tell you how I know. I tried to say something, but so we can't send them anymore. So just the fact that I got out probably saved, I don't know how many people. Say a quarter of the people would have got into trouble. That's maybe, I don't know, 50 people didn't get made into slaves.
That's good for them, isn't it?
That's what I'm trying to do now. I'm working on a book, Magic to Free Slaves. I'm literally working on it now. I've only just started it. But I'm trying to get it so that it can get out there, because I'm looking and I'm thinking, and look, I know that these slavers all around the world are basically linked to embassies. They're not just like business people who are doing this. They're doing it for money, but they're linked to embassies. So what you've got is people with diplomatic immunity, which means don't just think, Mark, other places in Latin America. You've also got to think places like London, because London has all the embassies in. Now, if I'm right, you know how governments always make out they can do something if they want to against people with diplomatic immunity, you know, like ambassadors and people like this. I don't think they can. I think that's them bullshitting, which means if they class their planes as diplomatic bags or ships, they could literally be snatching people off the street, or maybe these big elaborate hotels, and taking people and getting them in the ships, and literally just taking Londoners or people who are going through London, and they could wake up God knows where. So it's perfectly possible that something has been done in this country and everywhere else. And the trouble is, nobody wants to hear it. I mean, you hear it, but generally speaking, you contact Human Rights Society, they do not want to know because of the diplomatic immunity, because it's the only way it makes sense. I mean, look, Mark, you can't build a hotel like that and get away with it normally, because you'd have a hotel worth of evidence. You've got an entire hotel full of all the evidence they need to put you away. So the only way it works is if you've got diplomatic immunity, which they did. So that's one of the things that I'm trying to work on. I'm not going to be able to do a lot with it, because if I do too much, I'll probably get killed. So I'll do a certain amount, but you know, I can't do nothing about it.
Well, no, as long as you try to do something, that's all that matters in the world, isn't it?
It is, because nobody's going to help these people. The only people that are going to help these people, I think, is basically me and maybe the people who buy the book when it comes out. We're the only ones that do, because the way I look at it, look, I am a small fish, small fry them, because if they've got a diplomatic immunity, I can't do anything anyway, in terms of legally. What I can do is I can do occultism on them, and I can get other people to do occultism. But that's all we can do. We can't do anything else, but we're going to give it a try. You know, because let's be honest, that could have been me so easily. It could have been anybody. I mean, who the hell wants to be a slave? You know, because basically these people wake up and they're in a factory or something, and they're never going to get out. But it's the idea that it's not just the imprisonment. These people have to do what they see and they can buy and sell them. If they tell them, right, you've got to go and you've got to go and dig this and that, I mean, it's a terrible life. They torture them. These people be torture victims, and God knows what. I mean, I can't even think of the atrocities that they must suffer. But let's be honest, being a slave is probably the worst thing that can happen to you.
Well, yes. I personally think that when... I don't mean this as a reference as because of people's colour, but when they go on about being slaves, I think, well, we've all been slaves at one time in our history. I mean, even in England, we were slaves to the Romans, the Vikings, the French at one point. So everyone's been a slave, so we all can go down that avenue.
We can, because that's the thing I'm not bothered about in the past. I was bothered about it because it's still here.
It's reported all the time on the radio and the television. I think it's disgusting. And good for you for making that stand. I also know that are you still doing your horror hosting?
I'm still doing that, yeah. I'm still doing magical manifestations, yeah. So what day is it today? Yeah, I think it was on yesterday that on the Eerie channel. I'll put something out today, actually, or tomorrow or something. When this comes out, it'll probably already be out. I'll put the next episode out on my Facebook channel and on YouTube of Magical Manifestations.
And what kind of subjects do you talk about on that?
What I talk about mainly is about the film, but also the idea of trying to make the film real. See, I want to make the film so it's in the world but safely, because I think people don't get enough scares to be prepared for things. See, I don't want things to be unsafe. I want just a little bit of this horror film stuff to be there. So you maybe think, oh, is there something over there? So when something actually does happen, you're prepared. Because people aren't really prepared for things. And so they don't know what to do. And they just get stuck, you know. Because we can't help it. It's a life we live. We live a life where everything's made pretty easy, you know. We've got TV, we've got this, we've got that, you know. Meals come in we can get meals in little plastic containers or tins. I mean, the whole thing has been made ridiculously easy for us. So how do we stay aware of what can happen? And I think it's a good way is through horror films. And if you can make them a little bit real so people can see things a little bit, then I think that helps us even more.
I know you're writing another book of... You wrote Horror Mail 1, and I believe you're writing the process of writing Horror Mail 2.
That's right. Well, that's actually was made as a film as well as a book. The film was the main thing. I'm in the courses of working on Horror Mail 2, that's right. And it'll be like, again, it's an anthology film, a right set of stories within it. You know, it's still in the planning stages. I'm doing writing some of the parts, but it's until it's done, it's still, because really you need to write the stories first. Report me and then panther. And then sort of time them out and stuff like this and work from there. So it's still in the early planning stages, but I think it's a good, because it was Horror Mail. There was Horror Mail Tales, which are the web series. So Horror Mail 2 makes sense. You know, two films in a series, sort of. It seems to make sense at that point, you know.
I'm a great fan of the old series, The Twilight Zone and Outer Limits.
Yeah, that's always been great, The Twilight Zone, isn't it? Yeah.
They remade it recently, but they when they remade them, I don't know what they've done, but they've killed some of the episodes.
Yeah. It's right, isn't it? I think it's just one of those things. Are we still here?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, just something came off the window, that's all. Sorry, it came off the window on the computer. Sorry. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's just... It's never going to be exactly the same to recapture it, but you've sort of got to with the Twilight Zone. You can't just do your own thing, can you? You've got to recapture it. But it's not easy now. I mean, I don't get it wrong. I've seen some of them. I think they were great, some of them. And there's a lot of things that look similar to it that have taken the idea. Because it's not just the Twilight Zone, Tales from the Dark Side, and Tales from the Crypt. There's some other ones as well that are very similar that have appeared. There's like a one with voodoo in the title or something that exists, and there's several other ones that are trying to take the general idea.
Yeah, Dark Mirror did a series, didn't they?
That's right, yeah, that one there, yeah. I noticed some of them from the Tales from the Dark Side were similar. Did you notice that?
Yeah, yes. I noticed the influence, but we all get influenced. When I write my horror stories, I can see I'm influenced by a lot of other things. But I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. That's why I hate the word plagiarism. Oh, you've nicked that. Well, there's only so many songs you can write. And there's only so many words you can write. So sometimes you might write something that somebody might have thought of back, but it was never. It's not intentional.
No, I mean, it reminds me of this old blues book I've read once, and I've seen that basically most blues improvisations are based around, was it 7 or 14 songs? And they had all these ones down here, and there was like lists of these, and all the improvisations on there were the same. And what they were saying is, what you need to do is to learn these 14 or 7 songs and realise that all the improvisations you're doing will have to be these ones because they're the ones that work. And they were saying basically that, you know, that was the thinking behind this like book. And I thought, you know, maybe that's why the Rolling Stones only did so many songs. Because they went so far and they realised that anything they did would end up repeating itself.
Did you see about the Rolling Stones about that? Richard Ashworth?
No,
The Verb? Who wrote the song for The Verb? Well, apparently he got done by the manager for nicking a little bit of the orchestra bit for one of their songs. But Mick Jagger and Keith Richards have given him back the rights. Because they basically said, don't worry about it. You know, it's not as if you've intentionally did it. He probably heard it, didn't realise he heard it, and then,
Well, the thing is, as well, is a lot of the orchestral pieces have, like, certain ways of doing things. Like, I know the time that, like, there was a guy called Nelson Riddle, and he was normally down as an arranger, although he actually did far more. Because what he used to do is, when he arranged things, he used to keep the vocal line and throw everything else away. And what he used to do is he'd first start off by putting the instrument below the low vocal line, like a third or a fourth below it. And then he'd use that to produce the chords. And then he'd work up the orchestral arrangements and all this. Now, if he'd done it like Nelson Riddle did, which I think a lot of composers do, it's very likely they came up with the same thing at some point, because that was how he did it, you know? And he had so many cellos to so many violins and violas, and it all works out like that. But if that was what he did, you're going to come up with the same stuff because it's a method to do it. You know? If he's got the same chord progression...
Well, I think, like you say, you know, that's why I like the underworld, as we call it. Because I think we're more honest about things. We'll say, oh yeah, we did borrow that. You know, I did a version of Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven, but I changed it to zombie. I've kept some of these original words and I've added words. Yeah. But people say, oh, you can't do that. Well, actually, I'm not actually breaking any rules as such, because all of Edgar Allan Poe's stuff is public domain.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something I do, but I know what you're saying. But you're right, and I think it's because the underground media has become, how do I put it? It's hard to be honest, because basically speaking, we get attacked all the time. And all the underground movements do. We all get all these sort of problems, and it's basically just because we get attacked all the time, so we have to be more honest with people about what we do and things like that. And because everyone else isn't. Most other movements aren't honest at all about things. You know, they're basically built on lies. And with what we do, they would straight away, they would reveal the lies straight away. So you have to be and believe who you are.
Oh, I know you've been attacked many a time on Facebook and other organisations. I saw that time when they doubted your ability as an occultist.
Yeah, that's happened loads of times. You get that loads. It's actually the ones I worry about. It's the ones where they're more elaborate. Because, I mean, look, I was in Amsterdam once and they were shooting bloody gas through a door. Not through a door, sorry, through a wall. How the hell does anyone say in Amsterdam, think, you know what, I'm going to put in my hotel, I'm going to put in something so I can fight gas through a wall? Who the hell does that?
Some very sad people that live, my friends, some very sad people.
But that's the thing, is it's on too big a scale. And that's what always made time going, where is this moving to? But I also realised that it's actually quite fun. Because the thing is, I always seem to come out okay. And if anything, it seems to help you because you know how to strengthen yourself. You realise where your vulnerabilities are, both as a person, but also in what you do. And none of it makes any sense. In the logical world, it's not. It's just somebody somewhere has just decided that occultism or my books are public enemy number one. I don't even know what country it is. You know, I assume there's probably more than one country. I suspected at one point that what you were talking about was maybe Interpol, that Interpol had maybe decided that occultism was a method used by criminals and so, that. But the thing is, everything's a method used by criminals. You can't really do anything using that because you have to put away all of the, and hassle all of the computer people and, you know, the people that meet polo mints. But that's what I think it was.
How's your martial arts training going on?
Yeah.
How's your martial arts training going on?
Oh, that's not bad, yeah. I mean, I started, I've done one kickboxing lesson, so that was good. Because I was advised not to go with, because I had like this MMA lesson that was basically jiu-jitsu. And I was told, no, if you do jiu-jitsu, your hips will be gone in about 3-4 years. So I thought, so I won't really do that. I thought, I'll keep with that. So I did that. So I've done a kickboxing lesson. And that was the one I was doing. I mean, I do things every day that I do. But I tend to do the old World War II stuff.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that. I told my sensei that some time ago. And he never heard of it. He said, that's rubbish. I said, no, look it up. And he looked it up and he said, oh, I didn't realise that Eric Sykes was one of the main contributors to that, you know, the comedian. And people don't realise that, because when he does that chop to the Corky character in Sykes, that's actually him doing a proper chop.
It is a proper chop. They don't realise when you see these comedy things. What they were doing was because they didn't have a stance, but they didn't have a stance because they were fighting all the time. Their main stance was how they were. You know, the hands up, how they were standing. That's different from kickboxing, because you've got to reset all the time. Every punch has to be reset in the same position, and every kick. But it's good, though, because you get more range and more things like that, you know. I mean, what we did, basically, was just going around different rounds. You had a cage, and we did the cage bit, and went around things a couple of times, all the different bits, you know. Like under a line, a clothesline, you got to do that, like the boxing bit. And the different pads at different stages, and you know, and all that thing, and the bags and that stuff. But that went well.
Our book's still doing quite well about cartoon occult martial arts.
It is, yeah, that's good. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good as well, because that's a lot of that stuff you can attack from at such a distance, you can be somewhere completely differently, but you can use it close up as well, you know. I mean, I think it's probably. I think, honestly, there's probably more scope there, because I think in the future they're going to want more and more martial arts like that, because so many of them are so serious, you know, so serious, most of them. As in, you don't feel you can get into them, you know?
No, I know what you mean. They come too much on you at once, and you're thinking, hang on a minute, I accept that you've got to do this bit. You make it a little bit of fun as well.
Yeah. Well, it's the thing, they like to create too many techniques, don't they?
Yeah, because you're not going to remember them all. If you're in a fight, you're going to think, well, if I throw this punch first, then I've got to do a double punch. Unless you're doing it all the time, like we used to do Rindori a lot, which is basically where you do whatever technique you want against another person. So you learn to fight, basically, another person. But unless you're doing that every night, you're not. How many times are you actually going to come across a real fight? Most nine out of ten times, you're going to be able to walk away. It's only probably going to be that one time you may have to use something.
That's right, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I always get this feeling that this, when there's so many techniques and all these belts, is to give the impression that to make it so if you win, you haven't won. I'm just saying, if you go and you look at a lower belt, you've got a guy that's a black belt, and it's a competition and you win, or a match, it's sort of like you haven't won because you're still the lower belt than he is. Now, how the hell does that make any sense? You know?
Yeah, I understand that, yeah. Yeah, because you could go in a competition as like a yellow belt and be like a grandmaster on the day, because, you know, anybody could beat somebody on the day. I mean, obviously they wouldn't be shameful for them, but you're not going to be instantly made a black belt for that reason.
Yeah, and I think you should be. Because that's what it should be. If you're looking at a competitive record, it'll be better. But the trouble is with that you get people who just weren't any good. Which happens in life, where you get people who were terrible in matches and great in real life, you know. You get people who would be awful in these matches, and then they go out in real life and they beat the shit out of like crowds full of people. But they'd be no good at competitions, you know. But I must admit, I did enjoy the lesson. I'm gonna do it regularly now. I'm gonna do it maybe just once a week, I think.
Well, it's like I told you before. As long as you do something. I mean, I don't do karate so much now because I've had some few issues, but I do practice bits and pieces at home. But if I ever Tai Chi martial arts come up, I'll do it. Or like a low impact martial arts.
Yeah.
Because that's a softer style.
It is, yeah. I mean, the thing is, as well as much as anything else, is about keeping different things. Because I don't really think at this stage that any one thing is necessarily going to work. Because the sort of things you're talking about are weird in my life. You're talking like kidnappings, you're talking like the squirting poison through a bloody wall. You know, I was put in a cage in an airport recently. Because, you know, what you're talking about is these weird situations. So I'm just thinking more about the coordination. So the way I'm looking at it, if I do this, I gain more coordination. I've got a weeny bit more than I had. Because what I do at the moment is exercise in the morning. But what I'm doing is I'm not doing the same thing. I'm actually trying to assess every morning what I'm doing and if I need to change or what I need to do that morning, because I need to be thinking all the time. Now, if I do a routine, it'll probably work fine, but I need to be changing. So what I'm trying to do is get in the habit of thinking and assessing, because that's what's going to happen. If I do something, it's going to be so weird that I'm going to need to think on my feet. So if I do it every day and I'm thinking every day what I need to do, do I need to do press-ups today? Do I need to do a plank? Do I need to do this? You know, am I too rigid today? I need to do some stretching on the morning. So I'm changing it all the time. And I think that is better because I'll keep doing it. But also, I'm doing a little bit every day so I don't get really burnt out. But like I said, I've also got that point that it's changing. I'm assessing all the time. You know, that idea that the brain's always working, so I should make a more difficult target for them.
I know where you can find your books, but tell everybody else yet again where they can find all your books and watch your videos. And
well, you can go to my website, which is www.srob.co.uk, or you can put srob, that's S space Rob, into Google and it'll pop up. You can go to Amazon and put S space Rob. If you look at the website, www.srob.co.uk, you can click button, you can get my Amazon page. I've even got a Lulu page now with Peter Backs on. You can also get my YouTube channel. It's quite a few YouTube channels, actually. You can get the social media on there. You can order spell castings on there. Psychic readings, you can get the whole lot from the buttons on the top. You know, so it's all there, all available.
I think we should do like a quick occult gateway thing for people to concentrate on today. So if they need one like a quick one, just as so they can gain a little bit of quick energy.
I'll tell you what I'll do this one here. It's to open people's inner gateway, because you've got a gateway inside of yourself as well. And that's what we'll do. I'll do it this way, right? Okay. And it's very simple. I'll just say, okay. Inner gateway opens. The inner gateway opens. I call forth from all inner gateways the spirit of stress. The spirit of stress passes out of the inner gateway. Spirit of stress, I ask that you calm and become calmness. Become calmness once again. The stress becomes calmness and goes back within the inner gateway. The inner gateway closes. So it is and will be. And now you just breathe deeply and relax. So that's just made people less stressed. That's a method of calming yourself.
I like that one. I found something out the other day called anchoring. Have you ever heard of anchoring?
I've heard a bit about it. I'm trying to think what context you're talking about it.
Well, basically where you can concentrate on an object and you think of a very happy time. Where you know, the best, like a holiday, like you was really happy. When you're very anxious, you know, oh yeah, I remember that. And then the more you concentrate it and the more positive thoughts you get, and you become less and less anxious.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That's a good one, yeah. It's very useful, that, yeah. But that's the thing that got me at the airport. Why the hell was I in the cage? Because it was linked in with the slavery thing. I was actually trying to stop, to happen to investigate a situation where there was people possibly being smuggled out of the country in a possible abuse situation. Now, it's one of those things, Mark, that when you've got a brain that's always working on strange things that I am, I tend to see these things that other people miss. And at the time I thought, well, if I'm going to say something, I need to be out of the way. So I asked them on the phone, whether you can book in a flight at the airport. I thought, that's a bloody good one. I thought, jobs are good. And I'll give this, and then I realised there was something I had to phone in. I thought, I'll say to the airport police, and then I'll bugger off on a flight for a while, out of the way. Because, see, like I said that before when we were talking, I'm not really bothered as much about people being smuggled into the country. I'm more bothered about people being kidnapped and smuggled out of the country. And there was reason to believe that this was going to be the case. So I stupidly decided to tell the airport police. Did not work well, Mark. So to cut a long short story, I ended up in a cage in the back of a van. So it did not go well. I mean, I eventually got out, because I couldn't arrest me, you see, because I hadn't done anything. But I do fear that if it was real, they were acting, as I thought they were, or thought they might be, that I did bugger all good. Unfortunately, I do think it's possible that both situations, or one of them, went badly, you know. Because what I was trying to do is, Mark, I was trying to save some people. But that's part of the reason why I started this book. I thought, we can't really rely on the police or the human rights societies to do anything about these things, because they just don't. And the reason could be, if you're talking to some of these people who have diplomatic immunity, they're not going to do anything. Which means we have to do something. We've got to find a way of doing something. So I thought, well, if we do occultism, we can do something like that. And also it helps to spread the word around, because people will then be aware that this stuff can happen. You know, this isn't stuff that doesn't happen. This stuff can still happen, even here, or anywhere at all. And then maybe make ourselves a more difficult target.
Well, I think we should say to people, don't be scared of occultism. It's just another word at the end of the day. It's not. We're not going to be... You're not going to go out and kidnap the children or any of the other stupid bloody things people put on. It's a misunderstood. Just look it up. Look into it properly.
Yeah, I mean, if there's anything, it seems to be, it's the diplomats that you got to watch. And the light entertainment people, let's be honest, everything we've it's the light entertainers and what seems to be the diplomats you've got to watch. Not us, we're fine. You don't have to worry about us, you know. All the problem about the cultism and stuff like this, they've got it completely bloody wrong. You know, it's the ones with the diplomatic passports and all that sort of thing. You know, the top-level diplomats, God knows what they're getting up to. Maybe not our diplomats, but God knows what the other ones are getting up to, you know.
Well, I think that we... I like the fact you do occultism, and I always find that you are one of the most interesting people I always talk to, because you're always willing for a debate, which I like. I like the fact that you don't judge other people's opinions, because you like to listen in, you like to absorb, and if you think, oh, I can help someone, you will. I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, it's good to hear from you too as well, you know. You've always got a unique opinion on things.
Well, I think it's best to have one, because I think, like I said earlier today, we're too quick to judge. We all do it. I'm guilty as the next man. I'm not going to say I'm an innocent person, because I am. I even talk to Jehovah Witnesses. People give me some strange looks when I talk to them. They're not going to convert me on the spot. I'm not going to suddenly go, Joanna, please save me, or anything like that. They're just people.
That's right, yeah. I mean, the thing is, well, you're also a good sounding board as well. Because I think it's pretty obvious at times that when you get some of these weird things, that you get out of your depth. You do, when you get these, like you're in a cage, you know. And I tell you what, man, they don't give you much space in them vans. But the thing is, why were I in a cage? Surely I should have been in a seat in the back. Now, that says it all about their philosophy. Straight away, you're in a cage. And I'm thinking, this is insane. So hey, if I had even said anything wrong, I would have got arrested. It didn't matter in the slightest that I was trying to stop. Like, this, you're talking, like, the sort of crimes you can't ignore. I mean, people being smuggled out of the country, that means you can be walking along, someone snatches you, and you wake up and you're in Pakistan, you're chained to a bench. I mean, bloody hell's bells, you know. I mean, this is not somebody getting the car nicked, which is bad enough, you know. I mean, Jesus Christ, you're talking really bad things, aren't you? You're walking along and something happens, you know. It's a sort of nightmarish scenario, isn't it?
That's very true. Well, coming to the end bit, because I don't want to overrun, because I'm doing this for my other show. So, basically, how do you want to finish this off? Do you just want to say, I would say, go and visit your website, look S. Rob up. You'll be surprised at how much work he does. Read one of his books, and read it without judgment, and you'll be surprised how much you'll learn. Because he looks into every book he does with immense detail. It's not just written off just on the back. He does a lot of research. It's not just written on the back of a matchbook box. He does a lot of into the history of things, and I find them all very interesting. Always worth a good read.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better. I put the website on www.srob.co.uk.
Well, I'd like to thank you for being on the show, and we'll have another chat again one day, my friend.
Okay, thanks a lot.